Welcome to AB Testing Podcast, your modern testing podcast. Your hosts, Alan and Brent, will be here to guide you through topics on testing, leadership, agile, and anything else that comes to mind. Now, on with the show.
Hey everyone, it's Alan. Brent is not here. Brent is actually working on a spaceship that Satya is building, powered entirely by GPUs. It's going to be interesting to see how that comes out, but he'll be back. He'll be back soon. We have a lot of stuff to keep talking about. I was thinking just during that intro, it's the Modern Testing Podcast. We haven't talked. It's again, modern testing principles aren't that modern. Aren't about testing. Sometimes we talk about testing. A lot of times we just talk about life, leadership, everything else. We're going to do a little bit of all of that today because I have a guest. Aditya Chawla is here with me today. So Aditya, introduce yourself, and then we'll get going on a great conversation today. Say hello and introduce yourself.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. Thank you, Alan. And thank you for having me here. I'm very excited about the conversation you're going to have. I'm Aditya Chawla. I'm co-founder of QA Pilot. We are a mobile app testing platform. Our genesis is that we think that most testing platforms focus on web, not enough on mobile. And that's essentially what got us to building this platform, because my co-founder has experience in delivering large enterprise mobile apps which are used by hundreds of millions of people, and he found the gap in the market that there's no real good mobile app testing platform, and that's really why we started building QA Pilot. And that's also I think we're seeing a reasonable amount of traction because it's genuinely an underserved part of the market.
Yeah, that's interesting. So we'll talk a little bit about QA Pilot. I'm not going to stop you from talking about it, but I really want to talk about a lot today is challenges in mobile testing, because the challenges continue. It's always been hard. Challenges continue to grow. And then there's this, I'm not sure if our listeners have heard of this thing called AI that is changing the way software is being developed massively. So we're dealing with that too. So let's just kind of get into it. Let's talk about mobile testing. So I got my phone here. You may have a different phone. In fact, everyone has a different phone because there are 10,000 different phones out in there, and most of them are Android or Apple, but not all of them are. And the different versions of Android, they use different things. There's different apps, and there's a gazillion apps in each of the app stores. So other than that, why is mobile testing so difficult these days? And why? Actually, I shouldn't even say these days. In general, why is mobile testing difficult and maybe not talked about enough?
Yeah, let me try and, I mean, we'll work on this together, right? I mean, I'm sure you have.
Yeah. I have my ideas and opinions.
Yeah, so we'll start from the beginning, right? It's almost like a history lesson. So most web testing tools or UI testing tools start with having a good idea of what locators are, right? You need to be able to locate an element on a screen or some user interface. And the next time you come onto it for testing, you should be able to identify it with a reasonable degree of confidence, right? And all testing tools essentially expect to be able to do that. And for that, they use something called the DOM in web, and there are a whole bunch of other things which have been built around it, right? There are accessibility trees and so on. And if the developers use the accessibility trees and the DOM effectively, then you can write your test scripts in a less flaky, less brittle manner, and they stand the test of time. Now, that paradigm, when you move to mobile, doesn't work very well for a variety of reasons, right? Because one, most browsers are broadly the same. Most websites are broadly the same. And you can also test them on headless browsers. Whereas in mobile, you have two gates, right? You have the Apple gate, the Android gate. And within Android, you have different flavors. And you can build your apps in different ways. And not all of them follow the same structure. So creating this automation becomes a problem in a way in which it is reliable, not flaky, not brittle, right? That's one. The second issue you have is with mobile, you also have, like you said, the proliferation of OS versions, Android, iOS devices. You have to test on real devices. And that adds another level of complexity. And then finally, I think this will be interesting, which we'll probably speak about today, more today, is what AI is doing and what cloud and all of the other tools did is collapse the SDLC, the software development lifecycle. AI is doing that even more, right? You want to be able to deploy multiple times. But you can't do that in mobile. Mobile, you put a mobile app, somebody has to approve it for it to go onto the app store. And then the consumer has to download it. So unlike web, where you push it into production and the consumer comes on and gets the latest version, in mobile, there's a lag. And I think this is an underappreciated part of the SDLC and what's happening with AI and SDLC, that all the tools which talk about all the changes in SDLC just don't talk about this aspect of mobile. And I think all of this just makes mobile a different beast and that much more complex, that you can't take what you've learned in other types of testing and apply it blindly on mobile.
I think you can't. And that applies to desktops. So I'm thinking while I talk, which happens sometimes, and it may or may not make sense. A lot of, you're right about apps, you can't update, like you can't push an update to a user every 5 minutes like you can with a web page.
Yeah.
I think some applications use a lot of content from the internet, or they download in real time, so you can make those changes. But at the same time, phones don't always have internet connections, and no one wants to ship an app that won't work if you don't have internet connection. So it is interesting there. So you, as fast as AI development can go, you are limited in how often you can update your users. And I'm thinking this is true. I'm just thinking this while I'm saying it. So as much as now with AI speed development, it's got to be a better word for that. Excel, people, you can develop features much faster. It doesn't matter for web pages, yeah, applications, whatever. If I'm only able to push an update to my users once a week, maybe more often if they're in pilot programs, maybe less often if they're, because it's their choice when to update, I can get them a brand. I can give them, it could be a whole new application in 2 weeks.
Exactly.
And so it's not only a functional testing issue, is like you can't do it. I'm thinking about the user perspective. You can't do it because if I go to open, I freaked out when they changed my Spotify icon. The app was the same. Like, what do you do? Like,
yeah.
I want to talk about, I'm going to get back to the testing side of this, but I haven't thought about this deeply till this moment, is all the AI tools give you the ability to move so fast and change so much so quickly, regardless of the testing problem. How do you resist not adding 9 features to your mobile application over the pace of a week? And you may not, I'll ask your opinion on that, but like, like, what do you do? Like, I could, if I was an app developer, I could just keep on adding features and things and just kind of go wild in a way that I could never have done before. Yet it's a lot of shock for a user as they download the new application and it has 8 new features and they don't know how to use them.
No, absolutely. And let me add more complexity in this, right? And I think you touched on it, which is there's web functionality, which is in mobile apps, right? You have this content which is coming in. Now, you have parts of your SDLC or your CI/CD pipelines which push into production every 5 minutes or can push in every day. And mobile is a different pace, right? Both are moving at different velocities across your team. So it also becomes a management problem where the risk which you see in web is very different from how you perceive risk on mobile. And, and I don't think we speak about that enough, right? Because in web, you can fix forward. You can launch, you find a mistake, you fix it. And therefore, the amount of testing you do, the tools you need, the way the SRE team and the dev team and the mobile team, the QA team work together is very different from how mobile should work for the same amount of risk. And it's something which is, I think, changing, and something which I hope that we'll have a better answer in a year, and that because of what my focus, I'll be in the midst of this change, right?
So how do we test it? So even so, let's be more realistic for the user. We're still in the space of a week. We can still add or fix or change or enhance major functionality in a week. In my experience, the folks, Well, I'll try to give a leading answer here. How does that change how we need to test these things? Can we still do script-based automation? Can we still, like, how are we using AI? Like, how do we keep up? How do testers keep up if, like, the thing they're testing this week is so much different than the thing they tested last week, and the release train's got to keep on going?
No, I think script-based automation still is the bedrock of all automation, right? Especially functional UI. The other types of automation, but functional, I think, is not going anywhere, I would think. I mean, as much as people would like to believe that visual and it's going to take over, etc., I think we prefer a hybrid kind of approach where there is a script-based which gives that kind of reliability and consistency in testing across multiple devices. And then the fallbacks are all hybrid. Now, I think what the other thing which changes, and I think which testers have always complained about, which becomes particularly easy in today's AI world and AID world, is that testers complain when elements don't have proper IDs, right? And that's something which you hear testers do.
Yeah, that's been true in web automation forever, yeah.
Forever. But in today's world of AID, it's just one prompt to get the correct locators added to your web or your mobile application, right? So there are things which make life easier because it doesn't require the rigor for a developer to actually make life easy for a tester who comes downstream. It's just a couple of prompts and you'll actually get good IDs across your application, which then makes scripting that much more effective. So I think scripting is there. What we think is that there is definitely a place for AI. There is definitely a place for what can be done without human intervention. But the way we see it is that the bulk of the work has to be a combination of AI and human. So human in the loop. So, and that then doesn't become, it's not so much of an AI problem as it's a design problem. Because when you're designing the product, you need to make sure you bring the human in at the right point. You give the human the right audit trails. You give the human the right visibility into what the AI has done to correct AI, to verify AI, right? And to be able to make the verification cost and time lower than what it takes a human to actually do it manually. Now, if you see a lot of tools, the complaint is that, oh, I could have just done it manually in this amount of time. So I think it's more of a design problem. And, you know, just putting a chatbot on products is not the way out. And I think that's been, in my view, where the industry has gone. Just slap a chatbot onto different parts of the product.
Well, it's an easy way to look modern. And then get whatever chatbot to write your Python code for you. I want to play out something, a conversation I've had before, because I think it applies here as well. And I'm curious on your thoughts. I do believe, like, here's the challenge. I'm not sure what I believe, but I think I have a belief. The challenge is that it doesn't matter whether it's mobile where you can only ship once a week or web where you can ship 50 times a day. The pace of development is the same in both places. So I talked to a couple different companies about what are they doing about the pace of development. Talked about, well, do we have, it started from, well, we'll have humans do all the code reviews. And then the humans can't keep up. There's no way. Okay, how do we figure out which reviews the humans get involved in? And they can figure out, and even AI can help you find the algorithm for that. Or do you pull the humans out completely? Well, that's too much. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. And so the challenge is, I believe you, that we're still in a place where we need the human, but also inevitably, if you use that human even moderately, the human is the bottleneck in that release process. So I'm curious, maybe answer two questions at once here, but how do you figure out, how do you optimize the human involvement while maintaining velocity? And then how do you handle the risk? Like, you want the human involved, I presume, because it's risk reduction.
Exactly.
Like the human can plug in and go, okay, I get what's going on here. I can see things a little bit differently. I can blah, 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 that the AI maybe can't do. How do you balance human intervention with velocity, with risk?
Yeah, so I think those are the three parameters, right? Completely.
I think it's a really hard question, so I can't wait for your answer.
So let's see. Some of the I'll think through, right, with you. Hopefully, you can help me with questions.
I'll interact, but yeah. I want to start. This is a good place to dwell for a bit.
Yeah, oh, for sure. So the thing is, I think the framing that human is a bottleneck will always be true, because that's a constraining resource, irrespective of whether you go 1x, 10x, or 100x. Right? Mm-hmm. And today, machines will always go faster than humans. Now the question is, how little of a bottleneck can the human be? Can the human increase their throughput by 10x? So you're still a bottleneck because machines will still move faster, but overall throughput is increasing 10x. And I think that's how I would see it. We want quality engineers, so the people, and we think of it as release managers, the people who are taking the risk that something can be released into production, can do their things 10x faster while keeping risk same or mitigating risk. And what are the tools they need to be able to do that is how I would think about it, I think. And those are the tools I think we are building. So if you look at, we talk a lot about release readiness and all the tools you require for release readiness. So for example, I'll give you an example. In today's CI/CD, so we are not a replacement for security testing. You need to get security testing. You need to get experts in security to security test your app. But they do it periodically, right? You can't get them to do it all the time. But what you also need as somebody who's releasing stuff into production is to make sure the wrong SDK, wrong version of the SDK with the wrong adapter, etc., has not gone into production, right? So you need to be able to track those. And what trackers have gone into your mobile app as part of the SDK. So these are things which wouldn't have been a problem even a few years ago, because they got taken care of in your agile development process, right? In agile development process, there's handover from A to B to C. And in that, you saw exactly what the change was and the risk which was being moved from A to B. But today, that is not there because you're moving much faster, like you said. So the key elements, making sure, let's say, a particular tracker doesn't go into production by mistake because you used it in your, staging environment for some specific activity, right? Those are things I think become even more important. And those are the things which the tools need to equip the human to make sure the human is comfortable going at the 10x speed.
Yeah. So, and that's exactly, I think what we need are, I'm going to build on that. I think you're on to something. I wish, and this is the thing where I think you're right, but I don't want to admit it, and that the human's always going to be the bottleneck. I want bottlenecks, or the least bottleneck as possible. But where I think, in addition to, a lot of people are focusing on, I'm going to tangent a little bit here. There's a lot of companies like yours and other companies focusing on testing tools, development tools, how to build stuff faster, and then how to test things faster. What I spent a chunk of my early, like a long time ago writing, like, were diagnostic and debugging tools, like to help me figure out what's going on. I wrote tools, oh my God, 20 years ago to deep dive into TrueType fonts when they were brand new and be able to like look at all the gray areas and figure out why it may look fuzzy or whose font may be buggy or why this weird font from some weird place is crashing Windows. What I haven't seen yet, and maybe it's because these are happening internally in companies and not shipping, but the investment cost in ROI for building these diagnostic tools, where I would spend 2 weeks writing something, can be done in a couple hours at most. I wonder if the way we reduce the bottleneck of humans is to give humans these diagnostic tools to help them figure out if things are working in the way they expect or not faster. I think the answer is yes. I just haven't proven it myself yet. But curious, like how much do you think... Yeah. Like diagnostic and debugging tools are those going to become more important, kind of stay something that some teams use or don't use? Like what's your opinion on that? Like what happens in that area?
I have no doubt about it. I think it becomes more and more important because it just gives the human who's moving things forward that much confidence that if something goes wrong, there's a fallback, right? And that's where the whole shift left, shift right conversation also probably comes in, where you want to be able to take what's happening in production and inform what you want to do next in development and QA, right? You want to see a certain pattern which is coming up in production and make sure you're testing for that the next time if you missed it this time. And I think we think a lot about that. We think a lot about how you can take data from your observability traces and map them into testing flows. And to make sure that you run that from on multiple devices, in multiple conditions, because in mobile you're also running it in different conditions, right? Whether your handset has enough memory, enough bandwidth, and so on, and making sure things are working okay, right? I think the way to think about it from a tool perspective for testing, because that's my point of view, and maybe it's too narrow, but that's still my point of view, is to be able to integrate with the observability providers and match it to specific test runs. So we think a lot about, you know, looking at memory, CPU, while a test run is going on, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it goes back. This is going back many years. Can't do math. At least 10 years, 12 years. When I worked at Microsoft, we would have a lot. Even in our, I'm just thinking about Xbox One, for example, right now, because I was I ran across some old email about this weekend, and we couldn't ship every day. We would update our beta users. It was a big download, and download sleeves were slower back then. So, you know, as frequently as they would commit to downloading. Right. But we collected a lot of information. And of course, when we collect information, it's not like it's not a big upload, little bits of data that help us figure out what's going on. But we could tell what features people were using. And you can do the same thing with mobile today, much easier. AI can even help you figure out how to do this. But the point is, if I deliver a new feature or a change to a feature, and this goes on to the development side, I can't just think of, here's my feature. I used to call it forum-driven development. I'll deliver a new feature and wait for people to talk about it in the forum, see if it's any good or not, which is really stupid.
Awesome.
You want to be able to, like, I ship a new feature, but my canonical fake name is Shimmery Blue Menus. And I want to know if people are using them, what experience they're having, does CPU spike or RAM spike when they're using these things. And my feature includes all the code to make sure I can collect that data and see what's going on. Even if I can't, like, as soon as I deploy, I can begin getting that information and figuring out what I may need to change or adjust or tweak or delete before the release the next week or whenever the next release goes out. I think it's more important than ever, just considering the amount of volume of changes that can go into any update of an application, that we have the ability to understand how customers are using that feature. And then, as you said, pull that directly into how teams approach testing for that. Like, oh, here's all the time you hear teams say, oh, customers are actually using this different than we thought.
Yeah.
And they sound almost surprised, but you shouldn't be surprised because we can't predict how they're going to use it. But if you don't have the data, you never know, and you begin optimizing for the wrong flow. So it becomes super important. And if we can drive that back into our testing and the automation we create for these apps, it's even better, because then as much as we're not the customer, we can at least try and make sure their scenarios are working in a way that we're happy with.
No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's exactly, I think, where the tools are going. Because I think as much as they say there is a gate for mobile with the app store, that doesn't mean that the SDLC process is not changing. And I think all of these are the changes which are happening as we speak. And it's very exciting, I think. It's very exciting to be part of this. And I think in 2 years, it'll be very different. And we'll see how all of this plays out. It'll be different.
I want to talk about one challenge I've heard about. But I'll reference something you said earlier. You're talking about web testing. And there's a couple different engines. There's most things are WebKit or Chrome and a few other flavors around. But if you're a Chrome-based browser, all the automation just works, and the rest is pretty close. And that's about as much as I'll say about it. And it's getting better now with AI tools, et cetera. famous quote that I can't remember who said it or what the quote was about abstraction and programming, and everything's an abstraction and people just try and make everything easier. And by making things easier, they also make it more difficult. And the latest case in point for that comment is Flutter. And for those that don't know, Flutter is Google's UI toolkit for cross-platform apps, which is great. Developers, they can write once, one code base, renders everywhere. Yay, easier. Except it's sort of a nightmare for traditional test tools because they don't have the same accessibility trees. In fact, it's basically painting on the screen as far as I can tell. It's yay for developers, unless those developers are good developers and decide they need to test their code too. And we can do model view controller and test below the UI level, which they should be doing anyway. But we always want at least a little bit testing automation pyramid, which is just by mentioning that, people will probably turn off the podcast. I'm very sorry. It is not, I've always said the test automation pyramid is not a desired goal of your automation. It's how your automation ends up if you have a well-designed application. And I'm sorry, I hope I didn't hurt anybody's feelings by bringing it up, but you always want to write a little bit of UI automation, those end-to-end tests. I wouldn't base all of your testing on that because then you're in just so much trouble. But anyway, back to the topic. Flutter is awesome as an app developer and a pain in the butt when they try and test their code. Talk a little bit about that. I know QA Pilot helps with that, but talk about the challenge and how teams just kind of tackle that in general.
Yeah. No, Flutter for testers is a nightmare, right? Because it breaks everything you've done to test React Native apps or native apps, right? Like you said, it's a painting. And therefore, it is rendering widgets rather than elements and so on, right? As you would do in a traditional app. And within the widgets, you have locator elements which need locators. And none of these are actually available on Flutter. So either the developer gives IDs of some sort, which you can handle. And then, or you need to be able to create these IDs as a testing tool on the fly with a reasonable degree of confidence that they won't change when you open it in the next device. And I think that's something we've learned the hard way. We, like I said, my co-founder runs a company which builds mobile apps for large enterprises, and some of them are Flutter, right? So we had first-hand experience in testing Flutter apps, and we through a lot of trial and error, I think we've understood what kind of locators to assign to different modes of Flutter apps, essentially. And so some of it is visual, some of it is hybrid, some of it is the ID which is given by the developer. And a combination of that essentially works reasonably well. It breaks once in a while, but I think it works quite well. Now, there are other problems with Flutter as well, right? The other problem with Flutter is you still have to interact with the app and you go through Appium. And so as a simple thing like set value is something which you do as part of a testing flow. It works very differently in Flutter versus a React Native or a native application. And therefore, when you're working with a Flutter application, you need essentially a different middleware between your application and Appium and then the mobile app for the whole automation flow to work well. And I think that's essentially what we've spent a lot of time building, the middleware. It works well. We continue to improve it. And I think our customers are very happy with this because there's nothing else in the market which allows you to do black box Flutter testing. And I say black box because a lot of the testing tools and the ecosystem around Flutter are all gray box because they're essentially developer-led. Developers love gray box tools. And then there isn't a black box tool out there. And ours is, I would say, still a work in progress, but very good.
And you know, I believe that developers should write the vast majority of automation. So I'm totally okay with that. But there are some scenarios that are good to run once in a while. So I think having both is good. I'll leave it at that without getting too opinionated because we have plenty of time left, but I have a topic that's going to take a while. We cannot do an AI testing podcast. I'm going to replace Brent with someone with an I first name. Ian, if you're out there, you're hired. How does so many topics on AI we can talk about? Agentic AI is something I've been playing with quite a bit, or a little bit at least. Super interesting, super fun. I think your product does this, but what is the impact of, or what is agentic AI in testing? Like, how should we use agentic AI in general to help? I'm not even saying in testing, because I care much more about quality than I do about testing. So how do we use agentic AI to reduce risk and make sure that we're building a quality product for our customers?
Yeah. So maybe we take a step back, right? About AI then we'll come back to testing.
Step backs are good.
Yeah. So the way I think about AI, right? AI is essentially great at pattern matching. It's one of the things it does really well.
And I call it very, very fancy autocomplete.
Yeah. And a lot of the innovation has been in using this ability in different ways to get to predict the next token and so on, right? And then you create content, you create all kinds of things. Now, I think actually the recency bias, the CEO of Palo Alto Networks, right, Nikesh Arora, he had a great message on X or Twitter yesterday, where he spoke about the current AI, the tug of war, so to say, is between breadth and depth. Because at a consumer level, people think AI is great because consumers need breadth. You want to be able to ask whatever you want, you get a reasonably good answer, you're fine. But the enterprise use cases, you need depth and you need a very high degree of confidence. And that's where the risk parameters change. And that's where you bring in FDEs, you bring in all these guardrails, you're building all this scaffolding. It takes a lot of time to get an enterprise use case correctly. And I think that feeds into testing, right? Because testing is essentially about risk. And you don't want to add a tool which adds 10 or 20% of risk or variability to the risk you want to reduce. So I think at a high level, that's what it is. Now, what can AI do well, nevertheless, right? Because it's a new paradigm. And the way I think about it is that over a period of time, testing and risk verification, this whole industry has come up with its own nomenclature to talk to each other, to interact, to manage auditability, to manage risk, to manage consistency and reliability. And one of them is the BDD format, right? Yeah, it's easy to understand things, right? So the way we use AI, for example, is to, we've got all these adapters which convert your FSD, your PRD, your test cases written in your test case management tool into BDD. And we don't call it BDD, we call it predictive BDD, because it's what we predicted from our tool. And we present it, and again, coming back to what I said about making the quality engineer the superhero, we have to present it to the quality engineer in a way in which they can verify it quickly, so they 10x their volume, right? So that's how I would think about, that's one way in which you can use AI in testing without adding to the risk. Because anytime you use AI, you're adding risk because there's a variability, inherent variability. So coming back to this primitive, so to say, of BDD or knowledge graphs and so on, helps with that.
Yeah. And then just, I need a fake name for this, but a little translation, because not everyone listens to the podcast, I found out, is are tech folks necessarily, or tech adjacent a lot of times. But BDD is behavior driven development, where you're trying to, you describe the behavior first, and then you implement the code to make that behavior occur. So that's what BDD is. You mentioned PRD, which is a product requirements doc. It's just a requirements doc. So I like to translate the TLAs for everyone. just to double check, make sure we're on the same page. But yeah, that makes sense. So one thing, a couple episodes ago when Brent was back, and we're going to get him a new microphone and continue a conversation, we're talking about changing the modern testing principles towards some AI principles. And one thing we're talking about, which, and you mentioned, I want to hear you dive into a little bit deeper, is trustworthiness. AI can create all this code. AI can test all this code. AI can evaluate a bunch of stuff. AI can look at the customer workflows. AI can give us all kinds of information. Keeping in mind, AI is just a fancy autocomplete or a parrot that puts together words and code based on what it's seen before. So it's a little frightening. So we lose some trustworthiness on the development side. We have to trust what created is good. Then we have to trust the tests that AI created to make sure they're actually, like, there's a lot of blind faith going on here. How do we get over that trustworthiness gap? Like, what do we need to do to make sure that what we're delivering now at lightning speed for millions of people is actually trustworthy and isn't going to attack us in our sleep?
So I don't think I have a single answer, but I think there are a lot of things which are essentially...
If there was a single answer, I would just go sell that and be rich.
But
I'm not.
There are a lot of building blocks, right? We did speak about how the fix forward, the SRE bit, feeds into this, right? The ability to be able to see what the user is doing and react quickly reduces some of the risk which we are adding to make this whole thing faster. And I truly believe that it's essentially a design problem to make sure that you surface the right things to the human so that human can take action either after it's gone into production or before it goes into production if you're a mobile app. And I think there are some of the ways in which the systems are improving. There are also all these frameworks, right? A lot of the reason why, especially like a lot of JavaScript frameworks, you would use them in development. The part of the reason you would use these frameworks is because there is risk mitigation when you're shipping things at scale. So I think some of these things also, I think we'll see some really cool frameworks come in, which could essentially mitigate certain types of risk, which are AI specific, right? Which you're not able to sort in other ways. Now, I don't know what they are, but you see them happening. So for example, when WebRTC came in and there were a new type of, interacting through sockets, etc., you had a whole bunch of frameworks which came in to help you build WebRTC applications in a reliable fashion. So I don't see that yet happening for AI, but it will happen, I think.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to go back to my diagnostic tool comment and think out loud while I talk here. But we've seen already some of the newer models finding critical security issues in applications that have been out for years, many, many years, decades. And so you can say that in a way, AI is increasing trustworthiness, but we're kind of, there's a metaphor here I can't think of, but we're creating and slaying the monster at the same time, because without these same AI tools, we would never find these security vulnerabilities. So my opinion is on this, this is not thought of in advance, but just thinking out loud right now is the AI tool is going to create code fast. We're going to have AI testing tools to help, functional correctness. And we're going to analyze everything I said before about analyzing how users are using the software. As I think about it more, these diagnostic tools, these things that look at the code, not just the code, but the application as it's running and analyze it and maybe even communicate back to the other agents to fix the code as it finds its issues. I think there is something there that increases trustworthiness, but ultimately it's sort of up to the customer to trust it. As the developers of this thing, we can trust the tools all we want. We can trust that we've built the right thing. We can trust that we evaluated all the risks. But if it needs to solve the problem for the customer in a way that doesn't compromise their data or their personal information or anything else they have. So they ultimately, the modern testing principles talk about ultimately the customer can only evaluate quality, but trustworthiness is part of quality. So we can do a lot. And I just think the more we have the machines do, the more we need the machines to do. Yeah, I just made that up. And I think it's actually true. The more we have AI develop all of our code for us, the more we need to have AI make sure that code is trustworthy. This is frightening, but true.
No, it's definitely true. I haven't thought of it in those terms. And I probably haven't thought of all of this in enough depth, I think, to...
me neither. I'm just making it up on the fly. That's what we do on this podcast. So all that said, let's talk about the future a little bit. If if that's, you said it's true, you agreed, and you think about it some more, but Brent and I started this podcast, 12, 13, a long time ago, because we were beginning to see a lot more teams shift to agile practices and a bunch of testers wondering, well, what do we do if things are moving so fast? All kinds of stuff. We talked about delivery and how you accelerate the achievement of shippable quality. And we made our principles, which really are DevOps principles, but they were advice things for testers to think about and how they shifted into the new world. All those things are 100 times more true today because everything is much, much faster. Testers are in the same place. Like, oh my God, we're moving so fast. What do I do? Same thing's happening with AI. So things are already moving at this speed. And if I looked at LinkedIn, I see a bunch of folks in testing roles trying to figure out what to do, how to keep up, why is my job still relevant, or how come I have so much to do, or whatever. Very varying complaints based on the speed of software development in 2026. So where do you think that role's going? Like what's happening to the folks who are in these testing positions right now who are, I mean, some of them are adapting into new roles, some are doing different things. Like, I'll just leave it at that. Like, what do you think is happening to the QA role or the testing role as a result of all of this AI everywhere?
Yeah. So I think it's definitely the amount of change which is coming in due to AI, there's going to be a change in the role, right? And everybody needs to adapt. But I don't think the primary role changes. Or the release readiness, release confidence, the person who's going to give that confidence, I don't think that changes. That's always going to be there in an enterprise, especially a larger enterprise. Now, where that person sits could change. Now, for example, if you're seeing in a lot of web organizations that development essentially is happening in pods, where you have product managers, developers, testers all sitting together, sometimes even in SRE, and just pushing stuff into production, right? Because they have these environments, you've created this integration test frameworks and so on. And all of that is because of agile processes, which is you have these tools where
But that's been true forever. I think maybe it becomes, I'll interrupt, but this has all been true. We already see large corporations who have not had dedicated test teams for many, many, many years. And they're doing, people could complain, oh my gosh, they have a bug, and they do, but they're also making a crap ton of money, and money is really, customers are finding enough value in it to give them money, so it's good enough. So I think all those things were true with agile practices. I think they become, again, 100 times more true today. If I don't think there's a world anywhere where, and I know this still happens, I don't think it's sustainable at all, where there's this test team that sits separately from the dev team trying to test quality into the product. That was dumb 3 years ago before AI. It is extreme. It's not only dumb, it's irresponsible today. So yeah, I think we do. I think you nailed it. We're beginning to see this. Like, we have to be the testing expert, but your focus is on quality, not testing. How do you raise quality across the team? And yeah, sit with these folks and work together and figure out, because so like even SRE, yeah, everybody involved in creation to delivery, everything from developer desktop all the way to customer desktop. Conversations. I think, talking about human in the loop, and I'm on a soapbox here, as you can tell, I think team communication and team collaboration in this speed of AI have also become 100 times more important.
Yeah, and I think there'll be new tools which will enable this. So for example, the whole Jira, Git, etc. There's all tools which were required in an agile world. When you move from waterfall to agile, you needed these tools so that people can communicate faster. So, and I agree. I think within the AI world, people will move even faster. Are these tools enough? Do you need different types of tools? You need some of these tools to be bundled together, some of these tools to be unbundled into separate atomic functionality, maybe. And I'm sure all of this is happening, right? And like I said, next 2 years is going to be fun. And I think the best, for me, I think, see, if I was outside the industry and commenting on the industry, I think it's easier for me to have a strong opinion on what might happen. But when I'm so deep into it, when I'm talking to customers, dozens of customers every week, my mindset is to just listen and absorb and evolve with what's happening, right? And I don't really need to have such a strong opinion of exactly what will happen two years from now.
Oh, well, I'm going to ask you about that. I ask you a strong opinion. So let's, because you're in this space much more than I am. Paint me a picture. What does mobile software delivery look like 2 or 3 years from now?
Yes.
I see the look of, oh my God, that's a hard, okay, go on, go give it a shot.
So the amount of change, right, is going to be really, so like about even 6 months ago, if you ask me this, right, you would say there's all these vibe coding tools. They couldn't make mobile apps. They couldn't. And I personally thought it's going to take much longer to find vibe coding tools, which could make reliable mobile apps, good mobile apps, at that point, at the beginning of 2026. And then 3 months later, you have a whole bunch of these new tools and which build great mobile apps through vibe coding, right? So things are moving much faster than I thought. I think the large enterprise mobile app delivery doesn't change much. The people who are already in business. But the newer ones, I would think changes because they're essentially completely AI native in terms of how they built it, how they deliver it. But with mobile, the gate, the app store, the Play Store gate will definitely, I think, reduce the speed of change from what we have today. Because that is not an open source gate, that is tightly controlled by two large enterprises. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. And then I don't see any force which is going to change that. And as long as that is a constant, and I think it'll be a constant 2 years from now, that is going to temper the rate of change in mobile. So that's one. So I would say that would be my thoughts on what it would be in a couple of years.
And I wonder a little bit if that could change. I don't see app, and I don't think it will. Apple especially really want to control their ecosystem. Android, of course, you can sideload APKs. It's not for everyone.
Exactly.
And I wonder if someone—I don't even know the legal ramifications if someone were to make that easy and do an alternate. I think that's probably not even allowed. So you're right. I think even though there's less control on the Android side, it will stay there. So you still have to go through the gate to get to customers. Yeah, I don't know. Yet part of me, given the pace of change we've seen over the last, the acceleration over the last 2 years, there may be a future there that I just can't imagine. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. So what is happening on web? And I think this one thing will continue to, so one thing which is definitely happening is number of apps in the App Store, and number of submissions into the App Store as per both Google and Apple numbers is increasing. It's going through the roof right now. Because of these vibe coding tools, like I said, in the last few months, have made it so much easier to build good mobile apps. One thing which has happened in web, which might start happening in mobile, is use and throw applications, right? So you see, like for example, the Football World Cup started. Me and my friends, instead of using a fantasy World Cup tool or something which is out there, we built our own fun website where we play this fantasy thing amongst ourselves, right? And that's use and throw. We built it, now we're going to throw it away after the World Cup's over. We're not going to monetize it, nothing, right? I can see some of that happening in mobile, and the testing needs for that to be slightly different because you're doing it in a closed group. You don't have the problem of having to test it in the wild across devices which you across thousands of devices OS versions. Now, what that means for testing, what that means for quality, what that means for verification, I haven't thought through enough, but that's a trend which I think we will see in mobile for sure, because I see that already happening in web, use and throw applications.
Yeah, makes sense. Cool. Well, the time, drunk slinky, time flew by. I want to give you another minute here, but just a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much. I wanted to give you just a minute here at the end to talk about a little bit about QA Pilot and how you're helping solve some of these problems. I tried to keep it out of the conversation up to now, but since you're here and we had a great conversation, let's go ahead and take a minute and just kind of tell people a little bit about the product your company's building and what problems it's helping to solve.
Yeah. So I think we've spoken about a lot of the issues in mobile testing, right? And thank you for leading the conversation and, you know, covering so much of the ground, right? So one of the issues is that you can build mobile apps in different technologies and you have these gates. You can build React Native mobile applications, you can build Flutter applications, you can build native applications. And then you need to go through the Android and Apple iOS gates. Now, what we've done, and that really adds a lot of complexity and pain to mobile app testing. So I think our secret sauce is this middleware which we built, which sits between the device on which the testing is happening and the application on which the tests are written. So that's really the secret sauce, which reduces a lot of the flakiness, makes things work very well from version 1 to version 2. The next thing where a lot of the AI comes in is taking test cases in your test case management suites and different documents and converting them into BDD format, predictive BDD, and making them run iteratively on mobile applications. And I think a combination of these two reduce a lot of the regression and sanity time spent by quality teams on for our customers. Now, on top of that, we have all these connectors into dev IDEs and SRE IDEs, which allow people to get a view of quality on both sides, both shift left and shift right. And then finally, like I said, our thought is always to build for the person who is responsible to sign off on the release. And that's what I see QA people as, right? Now, whether you call it quality, testers, verification, whatever you might call it, the people who are finally signing off, they're taking the risk that something which goes into production will work well in production. That role is not changing. Now, that role's needs will change though in today's, as the world changes, right? As AI takes over the SDLC. What does that person need? And that's a prime focus for us. And we continue to build what we call the release readiness suite of products. And this is what we would give our customers. And we're right in the midst of this. And as the world changes, we'll also evolve with it.
Well, thank you again for chatting today. This podcast, it's gone out as you're listening to this, if you got this far. So thanks again, Challa. It's been great to have you here. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Lovely, Alan. Thank you for having me.